Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt, get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. This is your host, Veronica Monet. It's October. I can't believe fall is already here. It's amazing. Doing those last-minute sort of things we got to do in our yard, you know, picking fruit out of the orchard, putting the firewood away for the winter. Anyway, tonight we're going to be talking about marriage magic, and we're also going to be talking about how you can empower your relationship. So with me, or actually I should say how to move from an emotionally frozen life to an enriched chosen life. Really like that. Our guest tonight is Dr. Karen Sherman, and she's a licensed psychologist who resides in New York. She's been in practice for about 25 years, and her focus is relationships, marriage, and helping people achieve their greatest potential. She's the author of Mindfulness and the Art of Choice, Transform Your Life, which is a book that enables people to let go of their conditioned responses and empower them to make their own choices. She's also the co-author of Marriage Magic, Find It, Keep It, and Make It Last. And she's contributed to the Complete Marriage Counselor, Power of Persistence, Recovering the Self, and 101 Great Ways to Improve Your Life. I'm sitting here looking at her website right now. Beautiful website, yourempoweredrelationship.com. She's got a beautiful welcoming video on there. You might want to check it out right now while you're listening. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sherman.
Hi, Veronica. It's really nice to be here with you. Please call me Karen.
I knew you were going to say that, so I had to get the doctor in there first.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Karen.
Thanks for joining me in the Shape Free Zone.
It's now, really good to be here with you.
You're
What's
also...
What's the weather like out there?
Oh, my God. It's been beautiful, but it's going to turn rainy tomorrow, so I was actually trying to get some firewood put away before it rained. And spent an hour and a half and still got a long ways to go, so I have it under a tarp. And that's kind of life here in the woods. We're all very, very dependent on what the weather forecast is.
Yeah, we were in the 50s today also. It really took a turn today, so
yeah.
Got a little nippy here. I guess we have to get ready for fall coming.
I think it's here. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I noticed here that you're also on the psychology department at CW Post University.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you teach classes there?
I do. I teach undergraduate psychology courses.
Oh.
Yeah.
You should have me come out sometime and speak to your students.
Oh. I keep myself busy in all different ways with psychology because I really love, you know, people and understanding, you know, what makes them work and all that. So this way I also get a chance to do things in a very diverse way and keep myself, you know, sort of interested, not just always doing one thing.
Well, it sounds like you walk your talk because you've been married for 35 years.
36.
36
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we just celebrated another anniversary, so now it's 36.
Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
What's your secret?
Working at the marriage.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like to hear that.
Yeah, they don't. And, you know, that's really the fault of the movies that we watch and the novels that we read and the music that we hear. And that's what I tell everybody, that we have those expectations because of those wonderful fantasies that are the creation of the people who put them out there. But that is not really what makes your long-term relationships work. You've got to work them if they're going to work.
And what kind of work are we talking about here?
Well, I think it's a matter of prioritizing your relationship. You know, so many people say, "Oh, I really loved it in the beginning when I felt like I was so important and everything." Well, why was that? Because you prioritized the relationship, because you made the other person feel like they mattered and they did likewise to you. You can have that back. You just have to do the same things you did at the beginning when you first met each other.
Mm. Now, I have a program called Date Your Mate. I wonder if it's similar. I try to encourage people to go back to what the kind of conversations and interactions that they had when they first met, like, you know, go out someplace where you get to talk to each other face-to-face, and instead of, like, watching a movie or something where there's no interaction between the two of you. And also, I tell them that they should not talk about the children, the job, or the home, that they should talk about things like music and politics and the sort of things that people usually do when they're trying to get acquainted with each other. Because my theory is that after you've been with somebody for 20 or 30 years, you probably just think you know them. Because they change. We all change.
Yeah. Well, I have so many different things to respond to that. It's interesting. I just answered a query where they wanted an expert's take on something. And I said exactly that. I said that one of the main things you have to do is to have a date night. And that date night doesn't have to be long, but it does have to be quality. And during that time, you cannot talk baby. This was about, saving your marriage through the baby years. It can't be where you talk about business or you can't talk about the baby. You have to spend time with each other. So I think your concept of date night is absolutely essential. Mm. And, you know, in this day, I don't know about you, but one of the things that horrifies me is I go to restaurants and I see couples sitting there with their BlackBerries and never talking to each other. Unless, of course, they're telling each other romantic things through their BlackBerries. I don't know.
Oh, there is some of that going on. People don't even know how to have face-to-face conversations
really?
Anymore.
It's amazing. So here they are, you know, technically face-to-face, not saying a word to each other.
Dr. Sherman, I have actually heard of married couples, and I am talking about people in their 50s and 60s. It's mm-hmm. outrageous to me. They go to their separate bedrooms and text each other angry notes when they're having an argument.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. That one I don't think is such a bad idea, is because it may actually allow them to get a little space between them and not to have emotions heightened. Sometimes when you're writing, it would allow you to calm down a little bit. But, of course, you know, if they're really good at texting and they're, you know, whatever, they might still be able to get very nasty. So that wouldn't be a good idea.
At least they're not hitting each other, though, right?
Yes, that's right. But, you know, listen to what else you said, Veronica. They go to their separate bedrooms.
Yes.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of that going on these days.
Now, what about in your marriage? Do you have separate bedrooms? Or?
No.
35 years in the same bedroom. People are going to want to know, how do you do it?
Well, again, you know, I'm not going to say that it's all been glorious. There was a period where my husband says the dark years, that he refers to as the dark years. you know, we've had our struggles, but, you know, we have the desire to work on things, where we talk things through, where we really talk about our feelings. Now, that's different. If you have an argument where you don't talk about, well, you know, you said this, no, you said that, no, I didn't, you know, back and forth. Instead, let's take, for example, if my husband said that he was going to be home at 9, and he didn't get home until 10:30, and I worry. I can have an argument with him about the fact that, you know, he said he was going to call at 9 and he didn't, or instead, I can tell him that I really got nervous, that I was afraid, or I can also, you know, say to him that when he doesn't call, when he says that he will, it makes me feel like I don't matter and my feelings don't matter. That's a different discussion. And I think that when couples learn to talk about their feelings as opposed to blaming each other or talking about the particular situation as opposed to talking about what's really going on for them, that's where they get into trouble. So they really need to learn how to talk about what's going on inside of them. And that's a hard thing to do because people would rather blame one another and people are vulnerable. And so it's much easier to hide behind the situation as opposed to talking about yourself.
Yes, I teach anger management. I'm certified through Century Anger Management. And one of the things that I tell people is, you know, not getting angry is actually very frightening because it often means you're going to find out that you're fearful or sad.
Mm-hmm.
A more vulnerable emotion is hiding behind that anger.
Yes. Well, anger is generally a cover-up emotion anyway. It's easier to get angry than to feel the hurt and sadness, as you said. So if you take that away, as you pointed out, you know, you've got to get to the deeper feeling, and that's a scary place to go for a lot of people.
Yeah. What kind of tips can you give people to, especially couples who are maybe feeling some animosity and tension in the home? What can they do to be the first one? That's the hardest thing sometimes, you know, when the battle lines have been drawn, to be the first one to say, okay, I'm going to be vulnerable and express my fears and my sadness instead of continuing this war.
Well, I think I'm going to suggest two things. First, what I'd like to suggest is that you do preventative work so that you don't get to that point. And one of the things that I do myself with my husband, and I also suggest my couples do, is that they do checkups. You know, it's so interesting. We take our car in for oil maintenance. We hopefully go to doctors for our checkups, but we don't check in on our marriages. So, you know, if we go back to the honeymoon phase, we spend a lot of time asking about each other, being concerned about each other, and then when we finally get into the committed relationship, we let that slip. We get lazy. And then little by little, without realizing it, our relationship starts to grow apart. We get disconnected from one another. But if you would check in with each other with any kind of regularity, then you'd have a chance to sort of assess how are things going. So what I tell people to do is to say, okay, how are we doing? What do we like? What's going well in our relationship? You know, what did you do that I liked this week or this, you know, these last 2 weeks? And then you shift to what needs improvement. Now, I suggest that you say what needs improvement as opposed to what was wrong or what did you do wrong, because the phrasing has a lot to do with how it's going to come across. Now, if you do that, then you're not really going to go far astray for too long without pulling it back in. You know, very often when couples have a problem, it isn't where you can point to one thing. It happens gradually. It's like you don't see your nails growing. You then look down, all of a sudden you say, oh, my nails need cutting. So, you know, all of a sudden they wake up and they say, you know, I'm really not happy. And I'm not really sure when it happened. And then very often, unfortunately, they look back and they rewrite history and they start to say, well, there was this, there was that, there was the other thing. But if you stay on top of it and you're mindful of it, then it's not as likely to happen.
Oh, I want to hear more about that. This reinventing history.
Mm.
Is that a pretty common pattern that people do?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, what happens is that you wake up, you know, not wake up one morning and feel it, although some people do, but all of a sudden you start to feel this discontent. You feel that you're not happy, and you have to explain it. And so what happens is that you start to go back in your mind about, with that being your filtering system, I'm not happy. Oh, well, there was this, and then there was the fact that, you know, I never really noticed that my partner did that for me, and there was that. And then all of a sudden, since that's your filtering system, everything starts looking very negative and very bleak, and you start to almost, you know, sort of build a case for it. And
right.
That becomes your reality, and that's what you present to your partner. But yet, as it was happening, you didn't either notice it or you, and you certainly didn't report it to your partner. So now you come to your partner and you, you know, lay this on the table, and your partner is blindsided. You know, you never told me. You know, I had no idea. I thought we were doing fine. And there's like an entirely different experience of it.
Wow. So if once you've gone to that point where you've built a case against your partner,
mm-hmm.
can you go back? Can you, like, you know, come down from that particular stance? Is it possible, or have you pretty well alienated yourself at that point?
As far as I'm concerned, Veronica, every marriage has the opportunity to be saved except a toxic marriage.
And what's a toxic marriage?
When there's abuse going on.
Ah.
Okay? Other than that, I think that most marriages have the potential for being saved. And when couples come in and tell me that the feelings are gone, I'm always listening to hear, is there an affair going on? But even when there's an affair going on, that still doesn't mean it can't be saved. But that makes it a little bit more difficult. Generally, it's because other things have gotten in the way, and so they're disconnected from the feelings that are there. But with work, you can reconnect to those feelings. The only thing I really need from my couples is the desire to have it come back.
Well, what about, okay, so what about, like, addictions? Like, if somebody has a gambling or alcohol or marijuana, or even, and maybe each of these may have a different answer for you, but also a pornography addiction.
Anytime somebody is addicted, it is because there's some other problem they don't want to deal with. And so the addiction is an escape. And so what you really have to do is work with that individual to find out what is really going on that they don't want to be dealing with. The partner, obviously, is going to be impacted by the spouse's addiction.
Sure.
They have to decide if they're willing to stand by their partner and help them through it. But if the addicted partner is willing to do their work, then again, the marriage can be salvaged as long as the partner is willing to stay through it.
And if they're not, if somebody is not willing to get help for an addiction, then does that mean you have to leave the marriage, or what?
Well,
how do you advise people?
I don't know that I would say you have to leave, but you're certainly going to have a very strained, difficult marriage. I mean, you know, if your spouse is a gambler and they're using up all your money and now you can't pay your bills, I don't see how you could stay in that marriage.
Yeah.
If your spouse is a drug addict and, number one, they're hiding and secretive and using drugs and have the possibility of being arrested, and, you know, again, I don't see how you could stay in that marriage. You know, but again, I mean, I have worked with couples where one of them has been addicted and was willing to face their addiction, and the partner was willing to stay with the person as long as they, you know, helped themselves, and then the marriage was okay.
Mm, right. Yeah, so it
See,
works.
The common theme here, I don't mean to cut you off, Veronica, but I wanted to just make this point. The common theme here is the willingness to work on the issue, whether
yeah.
it be, you know, an individual issue or whether it be, you know, strain within the marriage.
Right, and both partners have to be willing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, I have had situations where one partner checked out and the other partner said, I still want this marriage to work, and I am willing to do all of the work. And the marriage went back together again. Now, in that case, that particular person did the lion's share of work, getting nothing back initially, but took responsibility for what had gone on, did all of the work, because it's based on the principle of action equals reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So if she kept giving and giving and loving and being there and just ignored all the dejection initially. Eventually, he came back around. So it is possible.
Interesting. Well, so when you talk about somebody making a choice to be empowered, to have an empowered relationship, what does that mean?
Well, it means a couple of things for me. First of all, if I could paint the most perfect picture, which of course there isn't, I want people to know that they individually have to be empowered. And for me, what that means is that you have to love, respect, and accept yourself. You know, go back to the fantasy that we have been given through the media, which is that you're going to meet your perfect partner, your Prince Charming, and that person is going to complete you. That's not really accurate. That's a codependent relationship. It's not healthy. Now, there's a difference in the concept of finding a partner who will enhance you, but not complete you. So when you are able to really love and accept yourself and respect yourself, then you can also give those same qualities to somebody else. You are empowered, and then you have an empowered relationship. Of course, that's an ideal situation.
Of course.
Okay. But if you can really be there for someone, you're available for them, you feel like you matter to them, and vice versa, then you have a very strong working relationship. You have the ability to be open with each other, to be intimate. And I don't mean intimate purely in a sexual way. I'm talking emotionally, where you feel safe with your partner. I can share what I'm feeling without worrying about being judged. I can tell you things and not be concerned that you're going to throw it back in my face during an argument. I can let you know about those things that I'm not perfect about, and it's okay. That, to me, is an empowered relationship.
Absolutely. And is the person empowered as well as the relationship, and what does that look like?
Well, I think, again, you know, the more empowered each person is, the more they can bring that into a relationship, and then the more the relationship is empowered as well. But I think that a relationship can help also empower a person. I think that, you know, there's been research recently about, first of all, you can't ever go into a relationship expecting to change another person. I think that what you ought to do for your partner, and research bears this out, is strengthen the good qualities of the other person. You don't want to make them into whom you want them to be, but if you can strengthen them, make them feel good about themselves, that's one of the beauties that a relationship can offer to you. So you want to be their cheerleader. You want to make them feel that again, they're important, that they have meaning. And in that way, again, the relationship empowers the individual.
So in your book, Marriage Magic, you talk about find it, keep it, and make it last. What if, I'm sure you've had clients like this, I know I have, who a long, long time ago remember being in love and having a great sex life, and now 20, 30 years later can hardly remember what that was like, have just totally gotten into these ruts. And they want help, but don't know where to start. Sometimes there's almost like this inertia that's just carrying them towards the negative, and it's difficult to break them free of that. And I'm wondering, you know, what kind of answers might they find in your book?
Well, a lot of the book, first of all, the book is written both from the male perspective and the female perspective, because I didn't feel that it was fair to only write a book where females related to it. I wanted it to be a useful tool for men as well. Second of all, the book is written so that you don't have to read all of the book. You read the parts that make sense for you. And in the book, there are various, among other things, a portion of it is devoted to different feelings that you might have. My sense is that a lot of people are experiencing different feelings and they don't even know what it is they're experiencing. So the particular emotion is described. There are also little vignettes of a made-up couple about what that emotion would look like in a day-to-day activity, how it would, you know, play out if you were experiencing a particular emotion. And then there are exercises about how to actually deal with it if you're feeling a certain way. For instance, one of the feelings is boredom. And again, research recently has stated that boredom is a huge killer of a relationship, that it is very important that there be novelty and stimulation in the relationship. And it doesn't mean you have to go do extreme sports. It just means you have to mix it up a little bit. So if you're the kind of couple that truly enjoys eating out all the time, well, fine, but don't go to the same restaurant all the time. Or try different foods, different ethnic foods. Just do something different. But if you do the same thing all the time, that relationship becomes tedious and boring, and you're just going to lose interest in it. You know, you mentioned anger before, so anger is in the book. How do you identify that you're angry, and then look at what's really underneath it? The feeling of neglect and what that feels like and how do you respond to that. So a large portion of the book is devoted to that. In the beginning, I talk a lot about the different expectations that we have and try to set the record straight about what the proper expectations are. Because to me, a lot of any situation, whether it be marriage or your day that you're about to have, or the party that you're going to, has a lot to do with your mindset and your expectations. And if you don't have the right expectations, that can really set you up to be messed up. I remember a client I had years ago who ended up being in a long-term relationship as opposed to a marriage. And the book is not really just for marriage. It's for anybody who's in a long-term relationship. And she was moving in with this guy, and after she was with him for a while, she was miserable. And I said, you know, why are you miserable? He's, you know, everything he was before. She said, yes, but I expected that when we, you know, were together, I'd be able to change him. And that is absolutely a wrong expectation. As a matter of fact, whatever you see about somebody in the beginning is exactly who that person is going to be. The only thing that's going to change is there going to be more of that trait. Because as the person relaxes and becomes more comfortable, that trait's going to come out even more.
So, of course.
But people don't realize that.
Yes. Yes, and that's what they always say, the honeymoon's over, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You know. So what do you do? You know, I don't know if you are a fan of Harville Hendrix, but I love this book.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the Love You Want.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And what I loved about that, you know, in the 80s we had Women Who Love Too Much.
Yeah.
And I think that was by Robin Norwood. Anyway, that book was so much about, you know, smart women, stupid choices, the name of another book that came out around that time. And it was all about finding the right partner. What I loved about Harville Hendrix's book, Getting the Love You Want, is it's more about becoming the right partner.
Mm-hmm.
And also that we tend to find people who have characteristics which we perhaps want to have,
mm-hmm.
that we feel kind of out of balance or lacking.
Mm-hmm.
And so there can be a huge attraction to that. And then when you actually start to live with it, it can start to be a turnoff because
mm-hmm.
they themselves may be a little bit out of balance with
mm-hmm.
the very traits that attracted you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Let me go one step further, and this has to then shift to my book, my other book, Mindfulness and the Art of Choice. Very often, without realizing it, we are reacting to things in the present day that are really not because of the present day, but things from our past. We are constantly taking in information that become part of our experience, but we're not aware of it. So those types of situations are called implicit memories. Now, we've got a whole bunch of them from our childhood. Well, when you're in a relationship, you're very vulnerable, and it is very common that your partner will push those buttons. So you think that because you're reacting at this moment, it was because of something that your partner said or didn't say, like, you know, you made a dinner party and your partner didn't compliment you, and so you get yourself all upset because your partner didn't compliment you on the food, or that your partner did or didn't do.
Right.
Okay. Now, because you have this vulnerability, probably there are several of these times where you felt that your partner didn't acknowledge you. And now you can point to this pattern in your partner,
right,
and say, look how you never do so-and-so. But the truth of the matter is that there's a real good chance that it's not really your partner who is neglecting you, but that they have pushed these buttons from a feeling you had from your childhood. And very often, this comes up in relationships and really complicates it, because the person who's having these reactions does not realize that it is really something from their past, and yet they are having these negative responses to the mate who doesn't get it and feels
right.
like a target. So that gets a little hairy, and it gets even more complicated when both partners have these kinds of reactions, which, according to Harpal Hendricks, it would not be unlikely because they would have found each other.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, like a fun kind of example would be, you know, that a woman makes this dinner party and the guy hasn't, you know, said, wow, the food is great. And when she says to him, you know, you didn't say anything, he says, well, I had three portions, you know, because guys would say, well, you know, couldn't you see that I had three portions? That should tell you that I thought it was really good. But she needed to hear it. And it really turns out it's because as a kid, she was never complimented or told her work was good.
Yeah.
And that's what she's really reacting to.
Right. Right. And so many of the issues that couples experience do seem to go back to childhood.
Yes.
Yeah. So that can be a pretty complex thing to try to tease out. What kind of recommendations do you have for people when they're maybe not sure? Is it about my partner? Is it about, you know, my childhood, when they're confused like that?
Well, to me, there are three red flags that let you know if you're really reacting to something from your past. One is if the reaction is really, really fast, like in a nanosecond, the person is reacting. Generally, the reactions are going to be where they're going to attack, they're going to cry, or they're going to shut down. The second one is that the reaction is way too intense for what the situation was. It's just way over the top for, you know, way out of line for what actually happened. And the third red flag, and to me, this is the one that really clinches it. You can apologize, or you can say, wow, I really didn't, you know, I didn't realize it or whatever. The person can't let it go. They just can't let it go. They come back to it and come back to it. Now, if Veronica, if I may I use us as an example tonight?
Absolutely.
Okay. You and I had a little miscommunication about the time tonight.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. So,
yes, I thought I had told you this was Pacific Standard Time, but I did not.
That's right. Okay, now, so you apologized, and I said to you, you said, do you want to bow out? Because for folks who are listening, I'm in New York, and it's very late for me, okay?
Yes, we're pushing 1 a.m. for you now.
Yeah, okay. And you said to me, you were very gracious, you said to me, do you want to bow out? And I said to you, no, you know, I've made a commitment to, you know, whatever, it was a miscommunication, you know, we'll do it. If, however, I had said to you, well, I really can't believe you did that. I mean, I just can't believe you did that. And I went on and on and on. It would probably have been, I mean, yes, there was a miscommunication, but that it would really have been setting off something from my past where I felt like, you know, nobody ever really clued me in on something, or they always, were not concerned about my time frame, or
right.
You know, something like that.
Absolutely.
But you apologized, and it's, look, you know, mistakes happen. So I said, okay, fine, and that was that. It was over. So when someone goes on and on and on, that is the clue that, this is really something else.
Mm.
So it gets a little sticky, but again, you know, it's workable.
Right.
It's workable.
Right. Yeah. So it would seem to me that in order to be able to be present in the moment,
mm-hmm.
And specific about the situation that's in front of you, instead of having all this other stuff that's coming up from your past, that you'd actually have to take responsibility for doing the emotional work of your life, in addition to working the relationship, that you really have to be the kind of person who's looking at your reactions and responses to life in general, and not putting everything at the feet of the relationship.
Well, you know, yes, of course, it depends on how much emotions get in the way of your life. For some people, they don't. It also depends on, you know, how much of that you want in your relationship. You know, Veronica, you and I both do work where we try to foster in people having these strong, significant, intimate relationships. So for those kinds of relationships, yeah, sure, you want to do this kind of work because you want to really be close to your mate. But there are some folks who feel that, you know, as long as our relationship is working, we're having fun, you know, I don't need to get down to the nitty-gritty of every emotional thing that's ever happened in my life. And you know, if that works for them, that's fine. They may not need to do all of this kind of stuff, but it depends on who you are. For me and for my husband, we needed to do this kind of work. And I think that, again, if you want a very close, long-term, I want to say attached, but I don't want people to think attached in a negative way. I'm talking about where you really feel that you're there for each other. But yeah, you do. If you've got emotional stuff going on, you got to do the work. You know, before you asked a question about the anger or stuff, and what do you do if one of you is, you know, if you're angry? And I will tell you honestly that because of the kind of background I came from, what I learned to do as a kid is I would just clam up. That was the smartest thing for me to do. It would have been dangerous for me to do anything else. And so I brought that into my marriage. And it, as you can imagine, that would be very difficult for my husband because, you know, I wouldn't talk about certain things when I was upset.
Sure.
And one of the things after our dark years that I promised to do for us and for myself was that when I was upset, I would, you know, bring things to him, that I wouldn't just clam up.
Hmm.
And I just, you know, kept to that promise. And there were times where it was difficult for me, but I would just say to myself, you know, if I want this marriage to work, I have to, you know, present this. And there were times when I was upset with him, and, you know, nobody wants to be told, oh, I wasn't happy with the way so-and-so came out. But you know what I would do? I would say, you know, I made a promise to you that I wouldn't clam up. and that I would talk about things that upset me.
Right.
So, therefore, I want to bring something to your attention that is upsetting me. And once I put it out there that way, he was more willing to listen. He didn't say to me, well, why are you saying this to me? You know? But that was the agreement the two of us made.
Absolutely. So it's like this, it's kind of like, you know, brushing your teeth every day so you don't get cavities.
Yes.
It's just something that you, a habit that you have to build. And
yes.
And that fear and that resistance that we have to get past.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's your goal. It's like if you've gained 100 pounds and you say, I really want to lose weight, and then there's an ice cream sundae that looks fabulous, you have to look at it and say to yourself, you know, yeah, it would feel really good for this moment, but does it really suit me for my long-range goal? Is
right.
that really something I want to do?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and that is perhaps another thing to talk about. What do you mean by long-range goals?
Mm. Well, you know, I have trouble with when I hear that marriages are breaking up, and on TV they say, well, they were married for 25 years. They had a successful marriage. I just have trouble with that. I don't know if other relationship specialists would agree with that. But, you know, to me, I think that when you get married, your plan is to get married and stay married until one of you dies.
Well, I think that is the plan most people have, for sure.
So I think that divorcing after you've been married for 25 years, I have a hard time saying, well, it was a successful marriage. It lasted for 25 years. I think that that's what they were saying about Marie Shriver and Schwarzenegger when
yes.
they were divorcing after 25 years. And then we first started to hear, you know, what was going on behind the scenes.
Yes, right, exactly. Yeah. So it sounds like infidelity to you is not the end of a relationship. You see that there is definitely hope.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. Because, now, you know, there are some people who have been betrayed that just cannot tolerate the breach or the pain to the ego.
Right.
And you know, I was working with a couple last week where he was not involved with another woman, but he had a boat.
Oh.
And he goes on the boat all the time. And the boat is his mistress.
Oh, that's very funny.
But you see, she wasn't upset because it's not another woman.
Yes.
And I'm reminded of a couple I worked with many, many, many years ago where she found out that he did have a mistress and she was just wild. She was absolutely wild. And she pushed him out of the house and he really tried to be very good to her and to the sons. And, you know, even though she was able to see that, she was just furious. And when she started to tell me about the way she lived her life when they were married, she was so involved in community affairs that she was never home. And I said, those, you know, organizations that you belong to, you were having an affair with those. She wouldn't see it.
Mm.
You know, so it really has to do a lot of times with the ego getting hurt. But again, once you get past that and you look at, okay, you know, what was the reason? And, you know, are you willing to do the work to heal? And it takes work. I have a specific protocol that I use with couples. It does take work. I'm not going to say that you can just say, oh, I'm sorry, and it's done. It takes work. It takes time. Many, many marriages are better after that work than they were before.
Right, and I think that is the whole point, seriously. I mean, if people wait until they're in crisis to go get help, and isn't the statistic that the vast majority of couples counseling leads to divorce?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think that, first of all, many people say that they do marriage counseling, and they're not really trained to do marriage counseling. They're really people who do individual work, and then they say, yeah, okay, you know, I can work with you as a couple.
Right.
And there really is a difference between doing individual work and doing couple work. So I want the listeners to know that if they need to do couple work, they should make sure that this person is really qualified to do couple work. Now, I don't get any money for plugging the site. I am on the site, but I want to tell people that if they go to a site called Marriage Friendly Therapists,
right,
what they're going to find there are two things. People who, first of all, the credentials are actually checked out. When you belong to any site, you have to pay a fee to be on it. But this site, your credentials are actually checked. You're not just like, oh, okay, you pay this fee, you can be on this site. The second thing is that any of us who are on that site have signed an affidavit that we will do whatever we can to save the marriage. Many individual therapists who take on couples, I'm not saying all, but many, have the attitude that, you know, you go around this world once. If you're not happy, then why stay married? You're entitled to be happy. So when a couple comes in and says, I'm not happy, the feelings are gone, they say, okay, so let's look to dissolve the marriage. When I hear that, I say to couples, you know, I don't necessarily believe that. Let's work on saving your marriage. Let's do everything we possibly can. And then if it doesn't work, you still have the option of getting divorced.
Well, you always have that option.
Right.
Very definitely.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, you can still get divorced. But once you divorce, then we have no more options. And at least if you attempt to work at it, then you have no regrets. You don't look back and say, what if, maybe I should have. And especially if there are children involved, you can turn around and say to your children, I truly did everything I could to save this marriage.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's my take on that. Now, again, there are going to be some people who are going to not agree with that, but that's my take on it. The other thing that I want to tell the listeners is that if there has been an affair in your marriage, when you shop around, and I do think people should shop for a therapist. I don't think they should just, you know, pick somebody out of a hat. You should specifically ask, have you worked with couples who have had affairs? Because that's a very specific type of work. If the therapist does not know how to work with infidelity, then they may not get the best results that they could get.
Hmm. So, and explain that, because there's a lot of therapists out there, I think, that would probably wonder what this distinction is that you're creating.
Well, you know, I think those of us who, you know, I learned my techniques because I have gone to, every time I go to a conference on marriages, I always go to workshops on affairs, and I have learned the protocol that I use based on people who are really very educated in this area. So it's not where I just sit there and I let them sort of yell at each other and scream at each other and get their feelings out. It's a very specific protocol or, you know, template that I use in order to help them through the healing process.
Ah, okay. Okay, so what do you think the peculiar or specific stumbling blocks to an affair are, as opposed to other, you know, other kinds of challenges that couples can face? What is it that makes an affair
so
hard?
I think the biggest thing, and I always tell my couples exactly what the protocol is, and then I say to them, are you willing to do that work? You know, the person who's been hurt has a lot of emotionality, and I think it's really important for the partner who did the betrayal to really understand the hurt. And so there's a part of the protocol where the betrayed partner gets to tell piece by piece what they were feeling, and the partner who did the betrayal has to mirror it in their own words so that the hurt partner knows, you really get what I was feeling. And part of the reason for that is because, like cancer, you don't want any pieces of the emotion left over, because you don't want 5 years from now the person to say, and, you know, here's something else that's still bothering me. You want all of that cleaned out. That's not an easy process to go through, because many people who, even though they've had the affair, feel so guilty that they can't stand listening to the hurt that they have caused.
Right.
But
right, and it, and I believe, now, when I was married, we had to deal with an infidelity on the part of my husband.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that our therapist at the time had, you know, he said, how long is she going to need to process this? He wanted me to hurry up and get over it.
Yes.
And I remember that
you had to do that.
Of what?
I'm sorry that that's what you had to go through.
Oh, well, yeah, it was a long time ago, but I'll never forget what the marriage counselor said. She said, it takes what it takes.
Right.
Yeah. Do you find that the offending partner is often impatient?
Oh, absolutely. But yeah. I think, again, that it's because there's so much guilt that they can't tolerate hearing it. And it may take months, really, for that part to go through. But what I tell the offending partner is, this is for your benefit. You don't want this to come back up again and haunt you several years. So once we go through this, it is unlikely that there's going to be anything left over. And, you know, sometimes they can do it. Most times they can do it. But many times, you know, they can't. And they bail out. They say, no, you know, I can't do this.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, we certainly have seen a lot of scandals in the media for to that effect. Believe it or not, we're going to have to wrap this up. Tell our listeners the best way to get a hold of you and get copies of your many beautiful books here.
Thank you. Well, through my website, www.yourempoweredrelationship.com. There's lots of stuff on that site that is devoted to helping relationships. There's also a free program that goes on for 3 weeks to help get your relationship back on track. And I've gotten great feedback from couples telling me, wow. And that's a program based on the principle of action equals reaction, where one person just gets tips every day about what to do, and the relationship really gets back on track. There's a free newsletter as well. And then the books are, of course, available at that site or on any of the online bookstores. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Karen Sherman. Let's see what else. See, off the top of my head, I can't really think at this point. But that's basically how you get in touch with me. And I invite everybody to come on over.
Fabulous. And do you work with clients over the phone, too?
I do. I do.
Great. Great. Well, this has been a very enlightening interview, and I thank you so much for joining us in the Shame Free Zone. And to my listeners, next week's guest is going to be Jessica Drake. She's going to be discussing her Guide to Wicked Sex, a brand new book that's coming out. And I think they have the book actually has companion DVDs. So that's it for tonight, and I'll see you back here next Monday.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?